also. We have with us today Maya Green, who is a professor at Columbia Green Community College. Maya, say hello to your to our audience.
Hi.
Hello.
Nice to be here.
It's nice to be here. Now, just a little backstory. I taught last year, both in the spring and winter sessions at Columbia Green Community College. In the winter, I taught media and society, and in the fall, public speaking. And the reason all of that happened was because Maya Green stumbled on my resume somewhere and called me up as I was about to take off to go to Martha's Vineyard. I was on a plane, and it was empty, sort of empty, and I had my phone on the seat next to me, and it rang, and it was Maya saying, "We have to talk. We have to talk right now." And I said, "Well, I can't because the plane is taking off." But ultimately, I ended up teaching media society and public speaking, both great experiences. Janessa, who was one of my students, is going to be giving the commencement address and had help from Maya in preparing her speech. So I'm going to go out Saturday morning to the graduation just to hear Janessa.
I think that's a great idea, and that's funny because I had forgotten she was in your public speaking class, but the serendipity of that is really phenomenal that you were her public speaking professor, I was her professor in other communication classes. She came to me with her speech, and I said, I have a few suggestions, but it looks great, and then she got I think there were three or four speeches that they were considering, and they chose hers. And so now we've both had a hand in the commencement address at Columbia Green on Saturday.
Okay. Good. I'm really glad to know that. What else? Maya, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm actually not from upstate New York. I'm from Western Mass, and I've lived all over. I have a bachelor's in communication from Bridgewater State, which is outside Boston, and a master's degree from the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And I came back to the Northeast because it felt like home. And I got a position at Columbia Green sort of serendipitously. My resume came to the desk of the dean the day that the former professor of communication decided to give her notice. And I've been there ever since, so that's been about 10 years at Columbia Green.
Wow. And what are the classes that you teach?
Well, it's quite varied, but primarily in communication studies. My, I guess you could say my top seller, the one that fills most quickly and I teach the most often, is interpersonal communication. And I also do intercultural communication, occasionally media and society, which actually I taught this semester. And public speaking once in a while, and sometimes an English class or a sociology class thrown in the mix just to keep things interesting.
Good. And all of that has led into you now have a new, your own business, which is burgeoning out.
It is, yes. It's in its infancy, the baby steps, if you will. But it is, to me, sort of the perfect marriage of what I've been doing with my career and taking it to the next level. So the relational self is really a coaching and consulting business for individuals, for couples, for business owners and their partners who want to look at their personality and specifically the Myers-Briggs typology to see how they work with others and to look at strengths and weaknesses so that they can achieve prosperity in their businesses and their relationships. And it's taking all of that interpersonal communication expertise and combining it with what I now have as a certificate in Myers-Briggs typology and taking the two, combining them together and really helping people to examine how they can be more prosperous in all parts of their lives.
So what is Myers-Briggs?
Myers-Briggs has developed, it came out of Jungian psychology. For those who don't know the very briefest of backgrounds, Carl Jung was a prodigy of Sigmund Freud, and they branched apart a bit at the end of their careers, just differences of opinions, but Jung really explored personality, and he wrote a book on personality, which was picked up by an American woman in the 1920s. Catherine Briggs, who read it and said, I could do something with this. And she developed the beginnings of what became the Myers-Briggs typology. Her daughter, Isabel Briggs Myers, turned it into the test. It's not really a test, but a way to assess individual personality. And now it's one of the most widely recognized personality assessments in the world. It's used in almost every country around the world. It's used in Fortune 500 businesses, and it helps people to really examine four facets of their personality and where they fall on various spectrums.
Great. I once took a Myers-Briggs, but I have no idea why or when I did that. But I do remember taking a Myers-Briggs test and filling in all the little circles. And
I could probably, in a long conversation with you, I could probably assess where you are at on that spectrum, just having learned
sure
as much
could.
As I've learned about
yes.
it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. You know, let's talk. I want to talk a little bit about the college.
Please, yes.
And I want to go back a little bit because I think we were having a couple of little technical difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
So our guest is Maya Green, who is a professor at Columbia Green Community College. And please reiterate, because I think that might have been missed, the things that you're teaching.
Mostly communication studies with a focus on interpersonal communication and also intercultural communication, media and society, which is really, as you know, Matthew, it's a media literacy course. I occasionally will teach public speaking and sometimes sociology and English classes as well. My primary focus is on human communication. So the interpersonal class tends to be the one that I teach the most. And it really, for an elective humanities class, it fills surprisingly well.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all four of my classes in the fall are already full, which is amazing.
It is amazing. Columbia Green Community College is such an interesting resource in this community. And one of the reasons I wanted you to be on is because I have a little soft spot now in my heart for Columbia Green Community College. And I would like everybody in our listening audience, if you're thinking of going to take a class, you think of Columbia Green Community College, whether it's for a two-year degree, which now I think will be free if people stay in the state.
Yes. Well, there's certainly some, it's something that's worth exploring for every individual. And if you are thinking about the possibility of a free education at Columbia Green, go on in, get registered, and start the paperwork process.
Mm-hmm. How has the college changed over the 10 years you've been a professor there?
Well, I mean, before I was even at Columbia Green, we can jump back even further. We're in our 50-year anniversary, which think is amazing.
You know, yes, I do.
As
Ooh.
An institution,
I didn't know.
We started as this teeny little school in Athens and eventually came over the bridge and moved to our current location, which is in Hudson at the edge of Greenport right before you cross the bridge. And in the last 10 years... I've seen changes certainly taking place amongst, you know, the faculty that I've worked with, and we have adjuncts that come and go, you, of course, being one of them.
Yes, I've come and gone.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll come again.
Maybe you will. And the same with students. You know, the population of students is just so diverse and has changed quite a bit.
I was astounded by the diversity of this, the age of the students, because in media and society last year, I had people who were fresh out of high school to people who were in their 40s.
Yes, and I've had students, gosh, one of my fondest memories of a student was a gentleman who was nearing 80 years old, just about, who had actually worked in the mailroom under the Murrow boys. So he, under Edward Murrow's crew. And mm-hmm. So when we were teaching media and society, he had this inside perspective as a man who'd been there when he was, you know, quite young.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the students who are just, like you say, right out of high school, and they're very fresh. Some of them even still in high school doing a dual enrollment.
Yep, exactly.
So it's a diverse crew, for sure.
I had one of those students in the fall.
Yeah. And sometimes they're our best students because they're so eager to learn.
Yes. And it is incredibly interesting. And one of my favorite students was a young man who had dropped out after high school and not done anything. And then finally had an epiphany that he wanted to be in human resources. And came back to school and was working for that. And I think this fall he's going to be at UAlbany.
That's great.
Yeah, James Tierney was his name.
Oh, okay. I know yeah, James. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And this is, how does your, this new business of yours, mm-hmm. again, which is called?
The Relational Self.
And where can people find out about the Relational Self?
RelationalSelf.com.
RelationalSelf.com. I am surprised that URL was not taken.
I know. I was too. Well, the thing about the Relational Self is that it's one of these ideas, these theories that's been explored by psychologists and communication scholars. And it's a topic matter that's been discussed, but it's not really... a name that anybody has ever used in terms of business. And when I kept going back to thinking, like, what is it that I'm doing here? In the end, it's how do I relate to others? How do we all relate to each other? And how do I become my best self in terms of those relationships, whether it's my business, my romantic relationships, my relationships with my family members, mm-hmm. My colleagues. And so how do I really achieve that best self? And the only way to do that is to be introspective, to look at my own personality, and to really explore my own strengths and weaknesses and figure out how I fit into the larger puzzle. Mm-hmm. So that's where that came out of. And I feel like it was just one of these moments. I have to tell a brief story to set this up. About a year ago, it was June of last year, I went to this very interesting music and education festival in the Pine Barrens of New Jersey. And I had been asked to present an educational workshop of my choosing based on my history as a communication professor. And I thought, well, I'm really developing an interest in Myers-Briggs typology. Why not do something along those lines? So I did a relationship empathy workshop. So, relational empathy and personality type. And I felt so energized in this 1 hour of leading this workshop. There were about 20 people. We sat in a circle and shared information, and I taught, and they learned, and we discussed. And I came out of it feeling like my soul had just been fed. And my friend who I was with looked at me and said, I think you need to do something with this because mm-hmm. you look really like that. That was it. And I said, it was it. So less than a year later, here I am.
Oh, that's great. Now, yeah. Who do you think would benefit from your services?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I don't even want to, like, narrow it down to anyone in particular. But my primary focus, I think when I got the Myers-Briggs certification, I realized that most people who are getting certified to do the typology are focusing on corporate training, leadership training and the like. And certainly there's room for that. But I want to focus more on the one-on-one and working with either individuals, couples. If you're in a business partnership, let's say a CFO and a CEO, and in any relationship, in any partnership or in small group mm-hmm. relationships, there's going to be tensions because we don't see the world in the same way as, for instance, an introvert and an extrovert. We may communicate very differently. One example of that may be for an extrovert. I'm an extrovert, and the tendency is to want to talk about.
No, I would never have guessed that.
It's shocking. It's shocking. I know. But you know, the thing about extroversion, people imagine extroverts as like we're dancing on the bar and like the life of the party, and sometimes that's the case. not for me in particular, but for some extroverts, yeah, well, that is the case, you know?
In my youth.
Yes, perhaps. But one of the common traits of extroverts is that they tend to want to talk about things right away. So if they're having an experience or if they're frustrated with something or if there's something that's going on, they want to talk it through immediately. And if you're an introvert, the tendency is the opposite. The introverts want to sit with it for a while and really process it before they have that discussion. So imagine, if you will, you're in a romantic partnership with somebody or in a business partnership with somebody, and you're an extrovert and they're an introvert or vice versa, and you don't match up in that way. So even just knowing that alone can help you to approach conflict, for instance, yeah. in a much more productive way.
When I was at Discovery, we did a workshop, and one of the things that was very illuminative for me was I began to realize that men and women have very different ways of communicating.
Mm-hmm.
And I, almost everyone who reported to me was female. And it opened up a lot of ability to have better dialogues, just recognizing that we, perhaps biologically and perhaps societally or perhaps both, we come out approaching things, men and women come out approaching things very differently. And I remember thinking, this is good. This is good for me to know.
Yeah, I think that one of the primary focuses for the relational self is the exploration of empathy, where the people I'm communicating with are different than I am. And so how can I understand that difference, and how can I use that to my advantage when it comes to prosperity in my business and in my relationships? And I love the male-female dichotomy, because I actually do teach this a bit in my interpersonal mm-hmm. class. It is both, I believe, biological and certainly societally influenced. We are taught in many ways to perform gender, but there are biological differences, of course, and there are some scientists who have looked at, for instance, the differences in the male and female brain. One of the classic examples is that in the exploration of cadavers, the female brain has a larger hippocampus, and that's the memory center. So for those of you in a heterosexual partnership or a friendship, opposite sex friendship, or even with a parent or a sibling, when the female says, well, remember the time 10 months ago when you did this very specific thing, and the male might be like, no, I have no idea what you're talking. So it's the memory center, just a slightly different size of the brain that might have an influence on that.
Yeah, I have personal experience of that, both personally and familially.
Yeah.
My sister remembered something that my brother had done when he was six.
Yeah.
And he was like, huh?
What? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, we could dive deep and we could do a whole show on that subject.
Yes.
It's certainly a controversial one, though. And I always like to point out, when it comes to sex and or gender differences, that it is not across the board, that there are some generalities that we could reference. In the end, you know, individuals are all, you know, whether male or female, we all have different preferences for how we communicate, how we think, how we process information. And one of the things I love about Myers-Briggs is that it doesn't look at, you know, gender, age, or culture. It looks at individual preferences. And one of the things I think is so fascinating about that is I could be born with an innate preference to behave in a certain way. But if I'm born into a household or a culture which is somewhat different, I may learn to act out my personality differently than what my preference may be.
Mm-hmm.
Just as, and I mean, just to talk about gender for a second, a person who's born into what they feel is the wrong body, into the wrong sex, may feel like they're performing gender in a way that doesn't feel natural to them. I think we do the same thing sometimes with our personality.
Mm-hmm.
Even as adults, you know, we have to, maybe if we're less organized or we tend not to want to create lists and be scheduled, if we're a little bit more free with our timing and our scheduling and our planning, if we work in an organization that requires that of us, we have to still perform that.
Mm-hmm.
It may feel like a performance and not comfortable. So again, understanding that about ourselves, it can really be a game changer.
Yeah, it was why I was, in fact, I mentioned this to Lynn yesterday, it was when I was a salesman at A&E. I saved my tushy a number of times because she would do the detail work that I just didn't really want to do.
Yeah. Well, I'd venture to say you might be a P-type, Matthew.
What's that?
It's perceiving. So the J and the P, I'm a J. J is judging. And just to clarify, it does not mean I'm a judgmental person, although actually sometimes I am. But
aren't we all?
Aren't we all? But that, so it has nothing to do with that. It's more just that I really like to make lists. I like to plan things. I like to be scheduled. The P type tends to fly by the seat of their pants a little bit. They tend to be stressed out at the thought of having to schedule everything. And so a great example in terms of interpersonal relationships, my partner and I, he is a P-type. And so he doesn't like to schedule things. He looks at that calendar on the fridge and he kind of like scratches his head. And I can see the stress building. Whereas if I don't have that calendar, if I don't have that schedule, mm-hmm. I get stressed out. So we have to find ways to negotiate that mm-hmm. and figure out a common middle ground. And I have to remember that when he's talking about something, it doesn't mean he's necessarily making a plan. In my mind, he's making a plan.
Mm-hmm.
That might not be the case.
Yeah.
And he needs to remember that when I'm talking about something, I'm probably making a plan.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I remember my sister who is a psychologist, has a master's in psychiatric nursing, once said, I think I'm an introvert. And she said, I think you need to change your behavior if you're an introvert.
Well, you know, what's super interesting is that there's all these facets of these different typologies. So it may be that you're an expressive introvert, for instance. I personally am what's known as an intimate extrovert. Meaning that I exhibit extroverted tendencies, but I prefer intimate settings as opposed to big, large crowds and you know, the crowded, loud parties and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of facets there.
There are a lot of facets mm-hmm. to all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Maya, you know, let's just, where do you think, you know, because one of the things that I've talked about a lot in the few weeks that I've had the radio show,
mm-hmm.
Is talking about the way we are all being affected by artificial intelligence.
Mm.
And how do you see, for example, I got up this morning because I had to walk into the other room and say, Alexa, stop.
Darn because that Alexa.
Because she lives, see, mm. I'm anthropomorphizing mm-hmm. her. She lives halfway between my bedroom and the kitchen. So if I get that far, I can get to the coffee.
Oh, she's your alarm.
She's my alarm.
And you have to get out of bed to turn her off.
Yep.
Yeah. Well.
She's only one of five alarms I've got.
Okay.
Because yeah, I have a hard time waking up. No, I just have anxiety about not waking up when I need
sure.
to. So I set several alarms. Two of them are Alexas.
Mm.
But anyway, how do you think artificial intelligence is going to begin to affect the educational scene?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'd like to start by just saying that I think there are, like everything else, there are pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
I love my artificial intelligence for a few things, you know, it wakes me up in the morning, for instance.
Do you have Alexa or do you have a Google Home?
I don't. I actually, I just use my phone's alarm and I have downloaded music that I prefer
mm-hmm.
set to the right part of the chorus to wake mm-hmm. me up. So I can change it depending on my mood. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a, you know, guitar solo and sometimes it's like a hip hop song. And so that's kind of nice.
Yeah, I've been playing around with Siri and mm-hmm. I discovered one day that I now have a British male Siri.
Oh, that's nice.
I've gone through every iteration, and right this morning, it's a British male Siri.
Yeah, something very perhaps stern and commanding just, about the waking up with the British male voice.
No, it's just, what can I help you with?
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yes, it's like your personal butler.
Yes.
Yes. Again, you know, the pros, obviously we could talk about the pros of communication. I mean, gosh, just the availability of connection that I think is unsurpassed in our history. It just makes life, the ability for me to connect with old friends, to stay connected with family, to see what they're doing through video chats, for them to, my brother travels all over the world and he shoots videos with GoPro. And so to watch what he's doing in his travels through those videos and to be able to Skype with my mom and to use it in my educational settings, Skyping with students who can't make it to my office hours, for instance. I use the YouTube Live feature, and I do screen sharing and recording, mm-hmm. and I have a channel that allows my students to watch recorded lectures mm-hmm. and to get supplemental material that may not be as clear in the textbook as I want it to be. And that is especially useful in an online classroom where they are not able to sit in the class and to ask questions and to get the lecture face-to-face. The downside, you know, like everything else has a downside, but I do worry that what feels like a constant connection mm-hmm. through Facebook and Instagram and texting, et cetera, is actually really taking away from what we do need, which is that face-to-face, to see a person's facial expressions, to hear their tone of voice. And even though, you know, we could say, well, yeah, but I get that on Skype. Well, what we're missing in Skype is the context. It's the setting. If you're sitting with somebody in their home, you smell dinner cooking, mm-hmm. you know, and you get even, I mean, we could talk about personal chemistry. I love to reference the idea of, like, let's say I meet somebody on Tinder, Match.com, mm-hmm. and there's what feels like a strong connection. And we're back and forth with the texting and mm-hmm. the emailing and all of that. And we might even get face-to-face in a Skype or FaceTime chat. And I think, wow, they are as attractive as the picture. And we seem to really have this strong connection, and that's great. I may spend weeks or even months, if they're long distance, getting to know this person, only to get face-to-face with them and realize that physically and chemically, and I mean in terms of, you know, our pheromones, that we are not chemically compatible.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do that through the computer. You know, mm-hmm. Google's actually working on a prototype called Google Knows, where you can, like, I'm not even kidding. You can.
No, I know you're not. It's just.
It's so, I know.
It's just like Google is everywhere.
And it's sort of preposterous in some ways. It's like, I can go into Google and I can type lilac, assuming that Google Knows takes off. And P.S., I don't work for Google, and this is not in any way an advertisement. But and then that my computer can give me what smells like a lilac, you know, an artificial scent through the computer. We can't mimic real human chemistry, you know. So there are things that are lacking there, and that's only a tiny part of it. In terms of my educational experience teaching my students, the downsides there. I find it very frustrating that my students don't see the need, and I'm saying mine as if all of them. No, it's a handful, but that they don't feel the need to capitalize the personal pronoun. It drives me nuts. The personal pronoun needs mm-hmm. capitalization. And what I tell my students in the very beginning of the semester is that if they can provide me with a strong ideological argument for why they don't need to capitalize their personal pronoun. And, for instance, Bell Hooks, the famous mm-hmm. feminist author, did mm-hmm. not capitalize. She chose not to capitalize the B or the H in her first and last name for ideological reasons. The musician Ani DiFranco, same thing. Mm-hmm. Right? These are ideological reasons for that. I said to my students, if you can provide me with an ideological argument, then I'll happily listen to that, and I may allow for it. And if you don't know what I mean when I say ideological argument, then you have no business doing it. Capitalize mm-hmm. your personal pronoun. It's because they live in a ubiquitous text culture and SMS where that instant message you don't need to. Everything's shortened and simplified.
Yeah.
And that to me as an educator is frustrating. We still need to remember the the rules of grammar, you know. Call me a stickler, but
No, I found that to be one of the most interesting aspects of teaching last year was seeing literally how students communicated through their papers,
mm-hmm.
because it was illuminative to me of the texting culture in which we live.
Absolutely.
Because in several cases, it seemed as if they were struggling to do it correctly.
Mm.
But when they got really excited, they, you know, it was all text culture. Like, you know, I is small and,
mm-hmm. yeah.
You know, R is, you know.
R.
R.
U is you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe that's a losing battle. I don't know, but I'm still going to fight it till my dying breath. I think it's important. Don't get me wrong. I think, you know, when I'm texting somebody and it's casual, that's a different story. But it comes back to recognizing how we need to use communication effectively. And if you're trying to send a message, and if you want to come across as being educated and informed, then you need to formulate that message in a way that reflects that.
Yeah, and I think that's I have become very aware myself that I am now proofreading my emails much more carefully because they are really my signature.
Yeah.
I mean, that, and I want, you know, and I'm even doing that with my texts. I'm not using the small I. Mm-hmm. I use the capital I, and I go back and repair it if I've screwed up.
So do I. That's interesting. Well, and your emails have a signature that say, typing on an iPhone, please excuse
Choose
any.
My,
yeah, which I always appreciate because it adds a level of forgiveness.
Yeah.
Those
well,
phones
especially,
are small.
Yeah, even my iPhone 7 is small.
Yeah.
You know, or a friend of mine's signature is sent from a teeny weeny keyboard.
That's great. I love it.
I know.
I might borrow that.
Yeah. Ty West, who is a producer for Charlie Rose, The Week, and he is the producer of it, and he has his phone thing say, sent from a tiny keyboard.
Yeah.
Teeny-weeny keyboard.
Teeny-weeny keyboard.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm going to borrow it.
Yeah. What else, Maya, should we talk about today?
Well, I want to just go back to Columbia Green for a second.
Okay.
Because I don't want to, you know, again, the 50-year anniversary, that's huge. We're a part of this community, and it's...
Very much so, because you know, and people should be aware that there are art shows out there all the time
all
that
the time.
Are really wonderful.
Oh, man, there was one this past semester, Two Women, Four Hands. It was in the art building, and it just... astounded me. It was very the art was simple but complex. It was beautiful. I just found it so moving. So we're bringing in community artists. Right now is the student art show in the art building, which is always exciting to see some of the student talent. Last week was the student dance performance, which there's a dance class which is actually taught by our director of admissions, Rachel Keppel. And she also is very much involved in our community. I think she's very involved with the parade, the Pride Parade every year. There's just so many interesting things. One of our science professors, Dr. Rebecca Pinder, regularly brings in guest lectures. She did something recently on the tick problem in Columbia County. There's a student conservation club. I'm actually the faculty advisor for the student garden. And so we're planting things and helping them to grow. And there's just so many interesting things happening. And I wanted to just, you know, give a quick overview of just accolades that we've gotten in the last year or so that I think are
great.
Worth
yes,
mentioning.
Please. Yeah.
So EdSmart in 2016 and 17, they actually gathered data from the National Center for Education Statistics. And they looked at over 120 community colleges in New York State, and they were looking at things like retention, transfer rates, graduation rates, and then also the net price to attend college. And Columbia Green was ranked third on the list. We were third out of the top 10 community colleges in New York State.
Wow.
On those, you know, specific things, which we're very, very proud of that. We also... have every 3 years we do a what we call the SOS. It's the Student Opinion Survey. And we did one last year in the 15-16 academic year. And we achieved top scores in the state when it comes to things like quality of instruction, goal preparedness, and overall satisfaction with the college. And those things, I mean, to us, you know, the EdSmart and the statistical analyses, that's great because it is looking at retention, transfer, graduation, and cost. The student opinion surveys, we're asking our students, what do you think of this school?
Mm-hmm.
And that we scored so highly, and as a professor, to hear that one of the things that we scored so highly on was the quality of instruction, it makes me really feel like we're doing a great job at educating people, reaching them where they are, whether it's the 18-year-old, mm-hmm. sometimes the 17-year-old, or the 75-year-old in our classes, that we're reaching them where we are. Mm-hmm. We're meeting them where they are, and we're helping them to learn something, whether for me it's, you know, communication studies, but it may be the biological sciences, and it may be music, and it may be language. I mean, any number of mm-hmm. things that you can learn at the community college, whether it's a degree that you're pursuing, 2-year associate's degree. We have several certificate programs that take less time, fewer mm-hmm. credits, but you can walk away with a certificate that trains you in something very specific.
Yes.
And I also have students who are just like, you know what? I wanted to take a class. I already have a bachelor's degree, but I wanted to learn about this. And they come mm-hmm. back and they take a class. And there's just so many of those opportunities. I think it's a great way to serve our community.
Yeah, it is. And just so that people can sort of get it, what's the URL for the school? www?
It's cgcc.edu, so Columbia Green Community College.edu. You can also go to mycommunitycollege.com. That will bring you right to the Columbia Green website.
Oh, really?
As well.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
So cgcc.edu or mycommunitycollege.com. Mm-hmm. And we have a list of our programs. We've got sort of, you know, the current news, including some of those statistics that I just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
And some of the upcoming events that are worth noting.
Okay, great. Well, listen, I think we're gonna slide away. We've had a really great conversation.
Yes.
I think again, in your own business is
relationalself.com.
Yes. I want to do that, because I think if you are looking for some relational help,
mm-hmm.
I recommend Maya.
Thank you. I appreciate
very much.
That.
And now we're going to go into a little bit of music to take us